You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is the Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Weekend Wager, Anita Marks with you on this Friday night here on 98.7 ESPN. Brought to you by BetMGM. Enough talk. Believe in your game. Believe in your bet. BetMGM Sports. It is week 8 of the NFL season. Yes, somebody pinch me. Can you believe it? It is just flying by. So with you for the next 2 hours, we've got two very special guests who's going to be joining us. Also, Brian is producing the show back in New York City.
Hello, hello. How's it going, Anita?
Hi, Bri. How you doing, boo?
Good, good. You?
This is a long day. You worked earlier today?
I worked earlier today with Gordon, and I was saying before the show.
Gordon? What do you mean the earlier? That's yesterday.
That's what?
If you worked with Gordon, you worked yesterday.
Yeah. And now I'm looking at the 10 o'clock news and I'm like, okay, this is very trippy right now. I'm like so confused.
But you had a good nap today.
Oh, I had an amazing nap.
You had an amazing nap and you're ready to rock and roll.
Talk some gambling
and hopefully help people win some money tonight, right?
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
Have you this NFL season, have you gambled? Have you dabbled? Have you?
Not really. Well, I guess just with my friends, but not really like a fan doing stuff like that yet. Because no, I don't
you
live
haven't,
in...
You haven't downloaded the BetMGM app?
No,
and put
not
it,
yet. No? I'm very nervous about that, you know?
Shame on you.
I'm nervous. I'm not like Anita that could win good money, but maybe you could help me win some coin because I do need it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I unfortunately did lose last night. I was all over Carolina. I liked Carolina -2.5. I teased Carolina in the over, and I played a lot of like Curtis Samuel score touchdown and Carolina win. Mike Davis score touchdown. Carolina win. Robbie Anderson score touchdown. Carolina win. So, unfortunately, I like to head into. This is what I love about Thursday night. I like to, obviously, we all like to win, but I like to win on Thursday night. So when I head into Sunday, I'm playing with house money. Like I'm already up with house money. Like that's typically what I like to do. Obviously, it doesn't always work that way. But when it does, winner, winner, chicken dinner, it's always great. But unfortunately, of course, if folks out there watch the game, did you watch the game last night, Bri?
Since you know my early schedule, I watch a little bit of it and then I knock out.
Yeah, well, I mean, unfortunately, you got knocked out, and so did Teddy Bridgewater. You know, the Atlanta Falcons are a team that 3 games this season were up in the fourth quarter and then blew it in the fourth quarter and lost. And you kind of got the sense that that was going to happen in this game. And Teddy Bridgewater in Carolina, they were driving the ball. He'd completed this like unbelievable pass on like 3rd and 12 or 3rd and 20. I mean, it was like 3rd and long, and he completed this unbelievable pass to DJ Moore, and you kind of got the sense in the field that Carolina was going to come back, score the touchdown, go for 2, tie it up. It's going to go into overtime. Atlanta's going to lose again. And like I said, I teased Carolina, so I was up like +5, but there was a defensive player, and if I recall, his name was Harrison, because he got ejected out of the game. He had like a really horrible hit on Teddy Bridgewater, like in the head and neck area, and sent him out of the game. PJ Walker, who played for the XFL, came in. You could just tell, like, it was night and day, not the same. And then I think they felt, because because it was a division rival, they sent Teddy Bridgewater back in. And again, you kind of got the sense and the feeling like, oh my gosh, is this really happening? Could this happen? This would be amazing. And then unfortunately, he throws an interception and the game's over. And so now I'm heading into Sunday without house money. So that means we need to pick some winners for not only you, but for me heading into week 8. And there's a lot of great lines that I like. Let me break down the show for you. Again, Anita Marks with you. This is Week in Wager brought to you by BetMGM. Coming up at 10:30, Steve Verderosa is going to be joining us. He is, one of the best and most respected NFL scouts. Was with the Giants for 30 years, and he scouted Tua. One of the biggest storylines this week in week 8 is the fact it is quote unquote Tua time and for the Miami Dolphins. And a very, very interesting decision in regard to what the Miami Dolphins have decided to do, because they're coming off of 2 wins with Ryan Fitzpatrick. And they're only 1.5 games out of this division against the Buffalo Bills to win the division as it stands right now. And we can get into all the reasons why I love Buffalo this week against New England. We will get into that. But also only 1 game back in the wild card race. So, I mean, this is a Miami Dolphins team. Like, they're not like the Minnesota Vikings. They're not waving the white flag. They're still in it and very well potentially could win it. And now you've got Ryan Fitzpatrick coming off 2 wins, but they still decide to pull the heart out of Ryan Fitzpatrick, which, of course, he did share with the media that he was just like, his heart, he felt like his heart was ripped out with the decision and the phone call that he got from Flores to notify him that he was being benched for Tua. And I understand the timing of it all because, you know, this is the Dolphins are on a bye week. So now Tua has 2 weeks to kind of get acclimated, get more time, more practice time with the starting squad. But man, welcome to the NFL against the Rams and Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. And this line right now, I'm going to call it up. I'm on BetMGM right now. This line right now, I just want to make sure. Okay. So now it's down to +3.5. Earlier today it was at +4. So this, obviously, and as we all know, if you're listening to this show, you know, you're a gambler. Lines fluctuate based on public money. So I feel like, so in the course of the day, I do a lot of preparation for all the shows that I do. And so I watch a number of programs. And I'm an equal opportunity individual, right? Like in regard to politics, I watch everything. I watch CNN, I watch Fox, and I watch MSNBC. When it comes to sports, I watch everything. I watch Fox, I watch ESPN, I watch NFL Network. I want to hear what everybody has to say. I don't want to be biased. So, but across the board, everybody is taking the Miami Dolphins with the points. And I'm sitting here, I'm saying to myself, what? Like, we haven't seen Tua take one snap from center in a legit gotta win, pressures on, first team defense you're up against in the NFL. We haven't seen it. He came in for garbage time. What, 2 weeks ago when the Dolphins, I forgot who the Dolphins blew out, but you know, a lot of the analysis out there and a lot of the money that's in the public money is flowing on the Dolphins. Again, right now on BetMGM, it's +3.5, but a lot of the money is flowing towards the Dolphins. And here's the thing. What do we know about Tua? Like, all we really know is what we saw with him in college. I find this really fascinating. I am staying away from this game, and that's hard for me because I'm growing up in Miami. I'm a big Miami Dolphins fan, and I want to see Tua do well. And I do believe that he will do well. My only reservation with Tua, and if you know anything about me, and you know I'm really big into the draft, and I've said this before, I think the Dolphins will regret not taking Justin Herbert, and I said that even like months ago before Herbert even started playing for the Chargers. And it has nothing to do with ability or quarterback play, or because we haven't seen what Tua can do. My whole my whole opinion on that is that I'm just concerned that Tua is not going to be able to stay healthy. You know, one thing that I've learned in covering the NFL as long as I have is you get injured in college, well, even more so you get injured in the pros. And so my big reservation with Tua is injuries. And it's not just the hip. He's had other injuries as well. So, and then lo and behold, Justin Herbert comes out and just is crushing it in the NFL with the Chargers, which obviously makes my assumption and my analysis even more valid. But again, at full transparency, my analysis had nothing to do with Tua's ability. I do believe that Tua is going to be a very good quarterback. Will he be as good as Herbert? I don't know. Herbert's been pretty sensational. Which, by the way, you can still put money down that Herbert's going to be win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Right now, that line is at minus 170. I said this last week, and hopefully you listened to the show last week. Last week, it was plus money. The Chargers have the seventh easiest schedule for the remainder of the season. The Chargers have the seventh easiest schedule from here on out. That line and that juice is only going to increase, by the way. So I would put money on that right now. I do believe that Herbert's going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Joe Burrow is at plus 225. Tua right now is at 12-1. Just FYI. My money's on Herbert. It's been on Herbert forever and a day. And hopefully I will cash out some good dividends there. So we'll see what happens. But nonetheless, I just find this game fascinating. I know the game of the week is the Ravens and the Steelers, and we're going to dive into that game within this next 2 hours. In fact, again, Steve Bertarossa is going to join us in about 15 minutes. We're going to dive into Tua. I'm going to get his take. Listen, he one of the most respected scouts in the NFL, no longer with the Giants, was with them for 30 years. He's retired since, and fine, great. I have him on the show whenever I can. And he's going to break down his analysis of Tua and what he's expecting from Tua, as well as the Ravens-Steelers game. And Jeff Zeribek, who covers the Ravens for The Athletic, is going to join us in our next hour, in the 11 o'clock hour, to really do a deep dive into what's going on with the Ravens. Here's another game that I find fascinating, because the Ravens have been a team that have been struggling. Let's be honest. Their passing game, they've been struggling this year, has not been what it was last season. But the line opened up at 6.5. It's now dropped, I want to say in some places it dropped to 3, 3.5, and then now it's back up to -4.5. And again, a lot of this is because of public money and where it's flowing. But the majority of people, in the majority of analysts, in the majority of handicappers, are all on the Ravens. I'm on the Ravens. And probably, and I will share with you the biggest reason I'm on the Ravens when we get back. We will dive into that game. But I find that fascinating. You've got a Pittsburgh Steelers team at 6-0. A lot of people feel they have the best defense in the NFL. They're able to run the ball with Connor. Their Claypool has been otherworldly. One would argue one of the best wide receiving corps in the NFL. I think you could rank them in the top three, top five. I think that's a fair argument. So you've got a Ravens team who's now giving up more than 3 points. I can understand folks being on the Ravens if it was like -2.5 or -3. But -4.5? And I'm saying the majority of analysts are on the Ravens. So I find that just as fascinating. And to me, these are two of the best games on the schedule heading into Sunday. I'm curious. 800-919-3776, the phone number. That's how you get on board. I'm curious, what surprises you more? The amount of public money as well as analysts who are backing the Dolphins at +4.5? Or the same scenario, but on the Ravens side against the Pittsburgh Steelers at -4.5. What is more surprising to you? What do you feel is more of a sure bet for you in those two matchups?
And we just feel like this was the, you know, the best move for our team right now. You know, look, Fitz has done a great job. He's been productive. His leadership's been great. It's not an easy decision, you know, for me or us as an organization, but we felt like, you know, for the team now, moving forward, this is the move we needed to make.
That is Brian Flores, head coach of the Miami Dolphins, telling us all the reasons why he's moving forward with Tua heading into this week. I'm not going to lie. You know, I always look for silver linings in regard to our COVID-19 pandemic life that we're living right now. And one of the silver linings is my football viewing experience now. Because of the pandemic, we're a number of us, we're called face forward talent. Those of us who are on television, and we're not allowed up in Bristol. We're not allowed, quote unquote, on campus. And so my apartment, my back room in my apartment has been turned into a studio, and they came in and they set up the studio for me, and they have this huge 75-inch TV screen that sits behind me that has graphics for whatever show I do. So if I'm on SportsCenter, there's a SportsCenter graphic. If I'm on Daily Wager, there's a Daily Wager, so on and so forth. So my viewing experience now, I've got a 65-inch on my wall. It's my own TV. Now I've got this 75-inch TV that's on this wheelie cart for work that I wheel out into my apartment in my living room now. And then my neighbor who lives across the hall, she brings in like a 58-inch, and she sets it up. And so we've got these three TVs. And so one TV, we've got either the Giants or the Jets on, because of course that's what we do right here in New York, even though they both are absolutely an embarrassment to society. And then on another TV, we've got the game of the week, which of course this week will be the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Ravens. And then on the other TV, we've got the Red Zone. And we're having a discussion right now that I think we have to forego the Jets Kansas City game. And I think we have to put on the Tua Miami Rams game. I think that's a must. Brian, how do you feel about that?
I agree, Anita, because it's very depressing to watch the Jets and Giants right now.
Well, beyond that, I mean, listen, it's been depressing. It's been a depressing season,
right,
for all parties involved. But yeah. I'm just saying, like I am so intrigued to see what Tua's going to do.
Yeah,
that I'm willing to forego watching the Jets just get demolished by Kansas City.
I think that's the right call.
I think so. I think so as well. So my show question I posed out there was, what wager do you feel more comfortable about? Is it Tua and the Miami Dolphins getting four and a half, or is it the Baltimore Ravens giving up 4.5 to some against a team that some people feel is a top three team in the NFL? And let's be honest, the Ravens have not performed the way that we saw them perform last season. They are not up to speed. Will this bye week coming off of a bye week help? Possibly, maybe. Let's go to RJ in Bergen. RJ, welcome in. Welcome into Week in Wager.
Anita, how you doing? Great
Hi,
show.
Hi, good evening.
Listen,
thank you.
I love your picks sometimes, and sometimes I don't like your picks. But I want to remind you of something about the Patriots this week. If you recall, a couple of years ago, Belichick laid down when they played in Miami against the Dolphins to rest his players to go and beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh to get the home field advantage in the playoffs. He blew them out. You can't stay away from the Patriots this week. He rested half his defense. He rested half his defense last week.
But wait, time out, RJ.
They got blown out on purpose. He's playing possum.
RJ, time out. Let's have a discussion here. No Edelman. No N'Keal Harry. His wide receivers are going to be Jacoby Myers and Damian Bird, who, by the way, nobody even has on their fantasy football rosters. Gilmore apparently tweaked his knee at practice, and And there's some speculation, there's some rumors around the Boston, New England area that his house is for sale. I think he's going to be traded before Tuesday. Cam Newton, I know they're saying that Cam, I'm not done, RJ. I know that they're reporting that Cam Newton's struggles post-COVID aren't because of the fogginess. But RJ, I don't know about you, I've got a lot of friends. I've got at least 10 friends who have contracted COVID-19 and are still dealing with some mental fogginess. 10. And I mean like healthy young people who are just mentally not there yet. And they're 2-3 months out of COVID. So I think this is going to be a butt whipping. I think it's going to be a complete poop show.
What's the line at now?
Hold on one second.
I'm driving in the car, so I can't see the line.
No. I got my BetMGM. I'm online right now. I got my computer. I just have to log back in. It logs me out. I want to say, was it four? I think it was four and a half earlier today. Hold on one second. I just logged back in. Let me see. So it's down to four. So it's Buffalo Bills -4. The over under is at 40.5. The money line for the Patriots is +180.
Oh, well, that would be ripe for a teaser with me. I would tease that with the Jets and make money.
So make if you tease the Jets, you're teasing the Jets up to 29.5.
Yep.
And you're teasing, I'm sorry, wait, no, because that's 10. You're teasing the Jets up to 25.5, and you're teasing the Patriots up to +10.
Well, I might look for a third team to make a three-team teaser and collect a lot of dough.
Interesting.
The two team you just mentioned. I love the Jets in the two-team teaser. But there's no way. Listen, even the Johnson family, notwithstanding, there's no way the Jets are going to lay down, and they're going to. From what I hear here, and I live in Fort Lauderdale now, but I'm back in New Jersey for a while. And from what I hear, the team is aroused, and you know, it's just been a series of bad mistakes with GMs, coaches, ownership is probably only second worst to Dan Snyder. And what they got to do is get new honors.
RJ, from what I understand, you're all over the Bills. I mean, you're all over the Patriots. You think this is a farce. You think this is a mirage. Yeah. You think Bill Belichick is screwing around with people. Interesting. Before you hang up, I'm curious because this was another show topic I wanted to throw out. So on ESPN, the Chalk site, each and every week we put in our picks, right?
Right.
And I have something called a bad team teaser. Yeah. So what I did is I took Kansas City. It's a three-team bad team teaser. So what I did is I took Kansas City and I teased them down to -9.5 against the Jets. I took the Bucks and I teased them down to 2.5 against the Giants. And I took the Eagles and I teased them down to 0.5 against the Cowboys. No, that's my three-team bad team teaser. Now,
I love that.
Okay, but wait, I love it too. But wait, now you could go opposite, right? Now you can go the Jets +29.5, the Giants at +22.5, and the Cowboys at +20.5. So if you had to take a side,
yes.
If you were gonna do a teaser with all the bad teams getting the points, or all the good teams, you know, reducing the points.
The only problem with your bad team teaser is the Cowboys could get blown out because the kid. We don't know anything about that kid. He has a lot of heart. They say, you know, they're talking about him like they talk about Romo, but that's the one that you can get the blowout against you. And you got to be careful because they're snake bit. And I don't believe in the head coach there, and I think that he's done at the end of the season. So
So interesting. So if you would take the Jets plus 29.5, the Giants at plus 22.5, but you would still take the Eagles minus a half. Would that be the perfect play for you?
Yes, I love that. I like your bad team concept. The only thing I'm worried about is the Cowboys could get blown out. That could be a real Texas rodeo disaster.
RJ, thank you for your phone call. I appreciate it. And food for thought. If you think that Bill Belichick is trying to pull the wool over our head, of course that wouldn't be the first time. Let's go to Pedro in New Jersey. Pedro, you're up. Welcome in.
What's up, Anita?
Good evening. How you doing?
I'm all right. Anita, you want to hear a joke?
Sure. Go ahead.
The Jets are beating Kansas City.
Come on.
I said it was a joke. Can I use that? I can't even have it. It's a joke.
What?
Come on, man. Let's laugh.
What's your fantasy question?
All right, Anita. I'm stuck here. I'm on the team. I'm 1-6. I'm doing horrible in this league.
Yeah, that's no bueno.
No bueno. All right. So I have Drew Brees, which he has a tough matchup, right?
No, Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas is out. No bueno.
But I got Tua. That's my next option. So go with Tua.
I would go Tua over Brees. I would do that. And again, I'm just throwing, like, I don't, Pedro, do we even know what to realistically expect from Tua? Like, all we hear is like, oh man, at practice, this kid's great. Okay. Yeah. You know what? Practice is one thing. Game action against a real opponent when you're not wearing a red jersey is another.
Man, I'm 1-6 right
so,
now.
So let me tell you. And Pedro, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. Here are my quarterbacks I like this week in fantasy, guys. That very well could possibly be available on your waiver wire. Josh Allen against New England. I love Carson Wentz against Dallas. Who doesn't? Prior to today, I was really high on Derek Carr against Cleveland. But here's another thing. We really have to be very cautious of the weather. There's going to be a number of games on Sunday. The weather is going to be absolutely horrible, and we need to be really cautious about, by the way. So I loved Derek Carr up until today, and I found out that we were going to have 25-mile-per-hour winds at that stadium. Jimmy Garoppolo. Pedro, I think Jimmy Garoppolo could be available in your league. I know he's available in a number of my leagues, and I love him against Seattle. Seattle is excellent against the run. No bueno against the pass. I would start Jimmy Garoppolo over both Drew Brees and Tua this week. Just FYI.
Is not acceptable in this locker room, in this county, in this state, in this area, in this region. So Cameron Newton, you need to pick your expletive up.
That is Cam Newton talking about what he needs to do in order to help this New England team win this week against the Buffalo Bills. I just don't see it happening. Without further ado, Steve Verderosa joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. So, again, Steve is one of the most well-respected known scouts in the NFL, was in the NFL for over 30 years and was with the Giants for several years. So, Steve, I really, a few things I want to dive into. But first, let's dive into Tua because, you know, when you were still active and attractive as a scout, you know, you scouted Tua. So I'm really curious, what makes you think as to why the Dolphins have decided to go to Tua now?
Well, look, obviously we're not in the building. We're not there every day, so we don't know. But really, the bottom line is you're drafting the guy number one. He's the fifth pick in the draft. You didn't draft him to sit. And in all due respect to Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's played a long time in the league, has had a lot of success, some ups and downs, he knew the deal, and what difference does it make if it's week one, week eight, week 16? Obviously, it was going to happen sooner than later, in my opinion. You don't draft a guy that high for him to sit. Not in today's NFL when it's more volatile than ever before. Teams change from year to year. The bottom goes to the top. The top goes back to the bottom. So they drafted this guy to be the guy. So whether it's the Rams or a team with a poor record, I don't think in their mind it really mattered.
So, you know, again, you spent a number of years as a scout in the NFL. Curious, when you either scouted Tua or you saw film on him, give us your scouting report on Tua coming out of college, Steve.
Okay, well, first of all, you always say Steve scouted a few years. Actually, it was 33. Okay, so it was.
Well, I'm trying to be. Listen, I'm a female. I'm very sensitive when it comes to revealing age. So I'm just trying to be nice. But yes, you've there's a lot of tenure with you in the NFL. There's no denying that. But if you were to share a Tua scouting report with us, what would it entail?
Mm-hmm. Well, I actually got to see him almost every year he was there. And obviously, the last 2 years when he was a full-time starter, because he was a three-year junior that came out. And obviously, his last year even was cut short because of the hip injury. He has a lot of really strong qualities. I mean, he developed real strong leadership that the team responded to him. That you saw there at Alabama. He was very popular with his teammates. He throws a very catchable ball, nice tight rotations, can extend plays with his feet. He's got real nice agility in the pocket. I like the fact that he always kept his eyes downfield when he's moving around. And he was a good decision maker when he wasn't pressured. The negatives is, for me, you know, I thought this kid had an elongated delivery. A lot of passes start with his wind up from his waist, which you really don't like for the National Football League, and his measurables. You know, he measured 6 foot even, 217 pounds. And he's not a blazer. He's a smooth moving athlete, more like a 4.85 guy than a 4.5 guy. I just think that you like his athletic ability. He was accomplished coming out. He's got natural feel, like I said, for moving around. But the one thing, the more I watched him, and he threw some really nice balls, but despite his success, does he raise the level of play around him, or is it vice versa? When you look at the stable of receivers that he played with, the running backs, all those first-round picks, the offensive linemen, he had a first-round pick last year at tackle. They got Alex Leatherwood at the left tackle this year, who's going to be a high pick. Probably every one of their offensive linemen will get drafted. The running backs that they have there, he played with an unbelievable, strong supporting cast. And I've said this before, the largest unlevel playing field in American sports is major college football. No disrespect to Kentucky or Vanderbilt or any of those other schools in the SEC. You know, they're going to play Alabama 100 times and maybe win once. So he never really was challenged, and you wish you saw him being tested more, under pressure more. To me, Joe Burrow and the kid from Oregon were rated ahead of him in a lot of ways. Taller, better arm, more athletic, and did a lot. I can't say Joe Burrow, but Justin Herbert with a lesser cast. So I like Tua. To me, I thought there were other quarterback prospects, even last couple of years before this, that I liked better, that I had graded higher. So I think he's a good prospect. I'm rooting for all these kids because you like to see guys be successful. He's a really, really nice young man. But to me, he wasn't a difference maker like some of those other guys quite possibly can be and will be down the road. Go ahead.
No. I'm with you. Like, you know, I was screaming at the mountaintops for Justin Herbert, and I'm so thrilled what we're seeing from him with the Chargers. And so I'm just, and this is something that I've said before. I think long term, I think the Dolphins are going to regret not taking Herbert over Tua. So with that being said, why do you feel that the Dolphins decided to go Tua over Herbert in the draft?
The other part of that could be, you know, the Alabama lineage. A lot of Alabama players have success in the NFL because they're in that big stage. They've been in the big stage. They've been on national TV. They've been in the spotlight. So it's not going to be too big for them. And for the most major college players, it's not. But, again, not being in their building, not being in their draft room, I can't answer that question. That's why, you know, we can use a lot of different cliches, like Baskin-Robbins has all those flavors. You know, I don't think people are turned off by the lack of height as they were maybe in the past. I know at the Giants, we always used to like tall quarterbacks. Vision was a priority. But you see guys like Drew Brees and Russell Wilson, guys that have great pocket mobility and vision that it doesn't seem to affect them. And Tua can be one of those guys. But looking at their roster, too, offensively, their receiving core, their tight ends, their running backs, you know, it's not like the Steelers or some of the other teams that have offensive firepower or the Kansas City Chiefs. So now he's got to be the lead horse in the wagon, and he's, you know, for me, for my take, I didn't see him that way. Again, you had two receivers last year taken in the first round. You have a couple of receivers this year that have a possibility of getting drafted very high as well. He played with those four guys last year. It's going to be a little different cast that he's playing with and against for the first time. Also, you know, you mentioned the Rams and Aaron Donald. Look at the guards. Look at their offensive line. Eric Flowers and Solomon Kindy is a rookie from Georgia. They're going to have their hands full because that man up front, he might not be very big as compared to other NFL defensive linemen, but he is the quickest and the fastest. So it should be really interesting.
That's to say the least. Steve Verderosa joining us here on 98.7 ESPN, longtime NFL scout, and was with the Giants for over 30 years. This line right now is the Rams are favored. Again, they're on the road. This will be, I want to say, their third or fourth game, Steve, that they've had to. This is very interesting. A little, you know, because you know me, I do all the background checks. So this will be like this, I want to say, the third or fourth game that the Rams will have traveled to the East Coast. And apparently this season they have they're using like one of these like 787s, like one of these like monster planes. And so they have like a lot more room, and the plane is a lot faster than your average 747. So they get to the East Coast in 3 hours. And, you know, the way that the Rams are kind of handling their travel plans this season, especially in our COVID pandemic environment, is very different and very specific that they feel as to why it's helping them and not hindering them in regard to the number of East Coast trips that they have to make. But with that being said, this is still a game where the Dolphins are at home and they're getting 3.5. 4 in some places. And there are a number of people, you know me, I work from home. I'm watching all kinds of sports television all day, from Colin Cowherd all the way through Get Up. And I'm all over the place. I'm an equal opportunity person. And I just, it just feels like every analyst that I'm watching or I'm hearing on radio loves the Dolphins this week. And I'm very perplexed by it. Like I get that they're home. I get that the Rams have to travel, but this is an, on top of the fact that, you know, you want to, we're only human, right? And like, this is a Dolphins team. They're only 1.5 games behind the Bills to win the division. They're one game out of the playoffs in regard to trying to make it in as a wild card team. As you know, there's 7 now this season as opposed to 6. Ryan Fitzpatrick benched. There is pressure here for Tua. So not only that, like the pressure coming into this game, going up against not just Aaron Donald, but Jalen Ramsey as well, as we know, in some instances, really kind of shuts down an entire area on the field. this is a really big pressure point, and I'm just a little surprised how many people are on the Dolphins this week, getting 3.5, getting 4. How do you envision this game playing out, Steve?
Well, you mentioned Jalen Ramsey again, and I'm not dissing any of these players, but their receiving core, Miami, it's not a stellar group. Devontae Parker is a good player, Preston Williams, Isaiah Ford, the tight end, Dylan Smith, Mike Gesicki, the running backs, Miles Gaskin, Matt Breida. It doesn't put a lump in anybody's throat. The matchup I'm looking at the most are the two guards. They're both big and slow. And you're talking to a lot of defensive linemen over the years, guys that are really quick. A lot of guys want a quick set on them. Well, those two guards are anything but going to be able to quick set on him. And if they sit back, okay, the gaps are going to open up. Aaron Donald, to me, is going to have a big day. I think that's the inside stuff. I like the rookie right tackle, Robert Hunt from Louisiana Lafayette. I loved him coming out last year. Big, tough, long, has a nasty streak to him. But he's not going to see Aaron Donald unless there's some kind of a defensive tackle, defensive end, what we call a TE stunt or an ET stunt. There's going to be a lot of inside pressure. So that's the matchup that I'm going to be looking at Sunday when I watch that game.
Let's turn our attention to the game of the week, and that is the Baltimore Ravens going up against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, very interesting turn of events because of COVID-19. And I don't think enough is being discussed in this situation. And that is, the Ravens now are coming off of a bye to face the Pittsburgh Steelers. Because the Tennessee Titans and their mishandling of the COVID-19 protocols. Meanwhile, the Pittsburgh Steelers are coming into this game after a very physical game against the Tennessee Titans. Go figure how this is all playing out. Baltimore at home, -4. So you've got a Pittsburgh Steelers team that is now getting 4 coming in. With that being said, what are you envisioning? How do you see this game playing out on Sunday?
Okay, now on this one, the matchup I'm really watching is the Ravens corners versus the Pittsburgh wide receivers. To me, this is the antithesis of Miami's wide receivers. This is a stellar group. Deontay Johnson's really come on, Juju Smith-Schuster, James Washington has come on, and obviously one of the rookies that people are really taking notice is Chase Claypool. Big, strong, fast, athletic. You got two big long corners, Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters. They're both really good players, but they're going to have their hands full. So that's the matchup that I'm looking for. And Ben has done a great job between the tight ends and these receivers of really spreading the ball around. And he's going to have to look everywhere because there's going to be pass rush. Baltimore's added Mr. Ndakwe, which will just add the rush. You have big Mr. Campbell inside, who's tall and long, blocks a lot of balls and vision. So this should be a really good football game. I heard in their last 46 games they've split 23-23, so that's pretty cool. This should be a really good game to watch on Sunday.
Oh, there's no denying that. I'm curious. You've got a Minnesota Vikings team. They're waving the white flag. They trade their best defensive rusher, Yannick Ngakoue, to the Baltimore Ravens just in time, where he's had the 2 weeks off, the bye weeks, to get ready. How important, how crucial is that addition to the Ravens defensive line to get after Big Ben this week? That's the matchup I'm looking at, Steve. I think that is such a huge move, and so much was made by that move and that addition, picking him up because looking forward to possibly facing the Kansas City Chiefs again in the postseason. That's why they went out and got him. But I think that the timing of this, and granted, I know we're the trade deadline is Tuesday, but nonetheless, to get him when they did, I think also plays a role in knowing that they have to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in order to win this division. How do you see that defensive line for the Ravens going up against Ben Roethlisberger and that Steelers offensive line?
Well, I mentioned Calais Campbell. I mean, I loved him coming out of Miami 100 years ago. and he's been a really good player every place he's been. I was really surprised that, you know, Jacksonville, they were, what, a quarter away from going to the Super Bowl, and he was a big part of that defense. He's been unbelievably productive and does a lot of things that don't show up in the box score. Doesn't always lead the league in sacks, but pressures, batted balls, making the quarterback get off his spot, all those are big things. The one thing I really like about Baltimore's defense is they can rush the passer. They have speed at linebacker, which they really upgraded with Patrick Queen, but the back end is really good. You know, there's been teams, we went to the Super Bowl and beat the New England Patriots twice with an average to a decent secondary both times. Different group of players, but the common denominator was we had a great pass rush. Now Baltimore can rush the passer at speed at the second level, but they're really good at the back end. So that's a tough defense to go against. You know, the Steelers, you know, I think they're rated right now the number one defense. The other side of that ball is Lamar Jackson, okay? A lot of design runs, and they're missing Devin Bush now, not being in the inside. It's imperative for them to keep Jackson going lateral and not being able to go vertical. You don't have that guy inside. If that thing splits or something happens with the gap integrity of the guys up front, they don't maintain that, you're going to see number eight take it north and south and have some big plays that way. Both teams really good on either side of the ball. Should be a really good football game.
I think it's going to be an excellent football. Yeah, I think it's going to be an excellent, supposed to be. I mean, I'm expecting a really, really great, my favorite quote is one from Ray Lewis, and he said, whenever the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Ravens faced each other, you always packed two mouth guards, because you knew you were going to lose one in the game. That's one of my favorite quotes from Ray Lewis. I'm just another thing I'm going to be keeping an eye on, and I'm really intrigued by this, is why the Ravens pass offense has suffered this year. They just have not been able to get it going, and they went out and they drafted Duvaney. I hope I'm pronouncing his name properly.
Yeah, man.
And I thought he would be a really good addition to go alongside Hollywood Brown, but it's just the passing offense has just not really come together this season, and I want to assume that that's something that they spent a lot of time working on the last 2 weeks. So we'll see how that pans out.
You know, the year of the pandemic, it's hard for some of these teams, I guess, to get synergy. There are new players. Duvaney from University of Texas is a new addition. He's a kind of a unique kid in that he's not your nifty slot receiver that's really quick into and out of a really smooth in his patterns and his route execution. He's a strong, a little bit more of a straight line, sudden kid. I liked him coming out. He would have been a nice addition to any football team. But again, this is a new offense for him, and he's playing a pretty good role, and takes a while to have that synergy.
Steve, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Really, really so appreciate your time so much. It's so valuable, and your knowledge is priceless, and we're blessed to have you on. Thank you, my friend.
All right. Well, listen, have a blessed day yourself, and I'll talk to you next time.
Again, that's Steve Verderosa joining us. 30 years scouting in the NFL, and some really good insight for us heading into week 8 of the NFL season. If you want to jump on board, now is the time to do it. I know a lot of talk with Steve in regard to both the Miami and the Ravens game. Again, with this Miami game, I know there's a lot of really great analysts in this business that I have immense respect for. And the majority of them are on the Miami Dolphins, getting 3.5, getting 4 in some places. I'm just staying away from this game. I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. I mean, you know, it's not like Steve came on board with us and blew the doors off of his analysis or his scouting report on Tua. And it's not like the Rams defense is a walk in the park. So I am staying away from that game. But let's dive into what's going on with the Ravens and the Steelers, because I do have a play there. even though it's not a line that I'm thrilled with, right now the Ravens are favored by 4. The over-under is at 46.5. Excuse me. The Pittsburgh Steelers money line is at plus 185. Now, keep in mind, the Steelers are coming in. They're 6-0. But let's be honest, who have they played? They've had one of the easiest, I want to say, you know, was it Pro Football PFT or PFF? Somebody has their schedule ranked as like the top 5 of the easiest schedules so far this season in the heading into week 8. And they are 6-0. Their defense really impressive. Ben Roethlisberger, he's been getting the ball out of his hands. I read today 2.12 seconds. That's how quick his release is. Wide receivers are just, again, Claypool stepped up. You've got, you know, who even talks about Juju Smith-Schuster anymore? It's, you know, you've got Johnson, you've got Washington. Eric Ebron has stepped up, even though Eric Ebron is dealing with an elbow issue. He did all of them practice full today. But where's the concern for me? This is a Pittsburgh Steelers team that they're going back to back on the road. On top of the fact that they're coming into this game after a very physical game against the Tennessee Titans. Meanwhile, keep in mind, the Ravens are coming off of a bye. And I think the biggest storyline here, and not enough people are talking about this, is the loss of Devin Bush to that linebacking core for the Pittsburgh Steelers. If there is one area of your defense that you want to be the best when you're going up against Lamar Jackson in the Baltimore Ravens, it's your linebacking core. And without Devin Bush, that is a huge red flag for me when it comes to this Pittsburgh Steelers defense. On top of that, again, not taking anything away from their wide receivers. Wide receivers are great. I have many of them on my fantasy teams. But this is hands down the best secondary that the Pittsburgh Steelers wide receivers will have faced all season long. And on top of the fact the Pittsburgh Steelers made a trade with the Minnesota Vikings for Ngakoue, now you add him to Calais Campbell. They're going to be getting after Ben Roethlisberger. I don't believe that 2.1 seconds. I think it's a bad combination of Ben getting under pressure, wide receivers going up against the best secondary that they have, and the Pittsburgh Steelers not having Devin Bush and a stellar linebacking core to help contain Lamar Jackson. So I think all those things, on top of the Ravens coming off of a bye and John Harbaugh has these guys rev and ready to go. And meanwhile, the Steelers back-to-back road games, let alone coming in after a very physical game against Tennessee. I just feel like all the stars align so properly for the Baltimore Ravens. Even though the line right now is at 4, I'm all over it. So that is a wager that I will take, is the Ravens lane 4 against the Pittsburgh Steelers. 800-919-3776. Let's go to Jerry in Long Island. Jerry, you're up. Welcome in. Good evening.
Hey, Anita. How you doing tonight?
Okay.
So I just have a couple questions about my fantasy team. I have a couple tough decisions to make this week. So first off, do you think Kenyon Drake is worth dropping to waivers? Because besides the Dallas offense, like, I don't think he's going to come back and perform. I want to know.
I've been all over the Chase. I'm more the Chase Edmonds camp than I am the Kenyon Drake camp. And I've been waiting for this opportunity for Chase Edmonds. I didn't want it to be because of an injury. Obviously I never wish injury on anyone. This isn't the way that I scripted it to be. I thought Chase Edmonds would get more opportunity as the season progressed and Arizona would see that he is ultimately, in my opinion, the better back. But yeah, I'm all about Chase Edmonds. Hopefully were you able to get Chase Edmonds?
No, I was not.
No.
Yeah. So, do you know if Jermichael Hasty is going to start for San Francisco?
Yeah, that's you. If he's available on your waiver wire, Jerry, like, don't hang up on me right now and go get him and start him
I have him. No
yeah,
worries.
you need to start him this week. So I have a fantasy show that I do every Thursday night on PFN. It's called On the Mark with Anita Marks, and I had Stefania Bell on with me last night. She's a huge 49ers fan. She was talking about Hasty last night on my show, and then this morning I was watching Pro Football Talk and Peter King was on. And Peter King was blowing up Hasty. So now you got both Peter King and Stefania Bell blowing up Hasty. I think Hasty is going to be a sneaky good play this week in fantasy. I think he's going to be an exceptional RB3, let alone a very solid flex play for a lot of people. So if you have him, I would absolutely start him this week.
So that actually throws in another question now. So I had a disappointing probably last week for Mike Davis to start my week. But I have Myles Gaskin, Leonard Fournette, and Giovanni Bernard as my RB2 and then my two flex plays. So should I throw Hasty in there for one of those three, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I wouldn't bench Haskins. Who are your other two? Fournette and who?
Fournette and Giovanni Bernard.
Well, I think Joe Mixon is out. So I think Bernard is going to be the, so if I were you, I would, because Jones shares that backfield with Fournette in the backfield for the Bucks, but I think it's going to be a complete blowout. So who knows? I don't know. Maybe like the entire second half Fournette comes in and plays and they give Jones the night off. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to play out, but I would play Hasty over Fournette.
All right. Yeah. So I think I'll do that. But then Michael Thomas, my first-round draft pick, now out for half the season. So I'm sitting on an empty wide receiver spot, and my best choices are like Sterling Shepard or Braxton Berrios or Corey Davis, but I really have no idea who to pick on.
Ayuk's gone?
Who?
Brandon Ayuk?
No, Ayuk's gone, yep. Yep.
How about Cole Beasley? Everybody's sleeping on Cole Beasley. Is Cole Beasley there?
He's gone.
What about Mecole Hardman?
Mecole Hardman's gone. I think.
How about Hunter Renfro?
Okay. So that's my next choice. You think that's a good play?
I do. Hunter Renfro, I think, is an excellent choice.
All right. Awesome.
Okay. All right, Jerry. Good luck.
Thank you.
Let's go. You got it. Let's go to Dennis. Dennis, welcome in.
Hey, Anita. How you doing?
Good evening.
Good. How's everything going tonight? Good?
Okay. Thank you.
No,
you want to talk?
No,
you want to talk about the? You want to talk about your Jets?
Yeah. I gotta start out. Talk about the Jets a little bit here. Listen, I got a concern. I'm a diehard Jet fan, and I'm really, really concerned about Adam Gase coming back next year. And the reason why is I just got a bad feeling as a fan that Chris Johnson and Joe Douglas and even Gase are all on the same page with the way this season's going. Like they know the team didn't have talent. Like it's like they're almost on the same page. Usually by now, you start hearing some rumblings from ownership. I know they don't fire anybody in the middle of the year, but you usually hear something like, hey, this is what's going to happen. Even when Bowles was on his way out, you're not hearing anything. You're not hearing anything.
So Dennis, here's the thing, and I'm going to give Connor Rogers from Bleacher Report a shout out here because I had him on the show like months ago, when the season first started, and he made an excellent point, and he said, why isn't this a Jets team who doesn't really have anybody who's getting after a quarterback? Why aren't they even like tapping their toe in the water in regard to Clowney. Okay.
Right.
And he kind of, in a roundabout way, he kind of like just threw it out there that this is a team that they're going to tank this year. They're in it together. And what do I mean by tank? They're not going in. People, when you use that word, it's a very, it's a very sensitive word, because when you use the word tank, then, like, you know, people's imagination runs wild. When I say the word tank, it's not, I don't mean like, you know, teams don't go into a locker room and tell the guys to lose. That's not what happens. But when an organization tanks, what it means is that an organization is not putting their best foot forward to make sure that they're going to construct a roster that has the best players possible to win football games. Right. They're not telling their players to play poorly. They're just not doing their due diligence to make sure. I mean, they trade Jamal Adams. You know, Mosley goes on the COVID-19. I'm not going to play.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, it's evident. Dennis, it's evident what they're doing now. It's more evident now than it was two months ago.
Right. And they got 21 players. They have 21 players on their team that have one-year contracts that Joe Douglas signed. So these 21 players are all going to come off their roster at the end of the year. I understand that he has a six-year contract, and this is going to be a big project here. But my concern is that I don't want to go on as a fan with Adam Gase. Look, I got no problem if they're going to do this. This is long overdue.
But let me ask you this. If now you and I are in agreement right here, and again, this is you and I are speculating. This is total speculation, right? You and I are both speculating that this team tanked this year. So if that's the case, why are you judging Gase on this? If you and I are both in agreement that we think that this team did not put their best foot forward to win football games this season, why are we still blaming Gase for that? If it's an organizational thing, why are you holding Gase accountable?
Because I'm going to explain why. Last year, there were some things that he showed me that I wasn't too keen on. Now, I know they got hot in the middle, like late in the year, and they won like six or seven games, or I don't remember exactly how it went. But the only thing is that gets me is that when Sam was out last year, it almost like he didn't create an offense, didn't try to work with anybody. Well, my offense isn't working without Sam. And so be it. Like, he almost gets very babyish when things don't start going his way. And he showed that at the beginning of the year last year when Sam had the mono. And that's why I'm like, and okay, it looks like he's handing a play call duties over to the offensive coordinator because he wants to overlook the whole team. He wants to be more involved in the other aspects of the team. I don't know. I mean, look, you're making a great point that if they're all on board, but let's say the prize is there. Let's say the Trevor Lawrence prize does come to them. Let's say they get the number one pick and Trevor does come out. Let me ask you, you being in the business, do you want Adam Gase having control over Trevor Lawrence?
No.
Do you want him to be the one? No. And I don't either. I don't either. That's what I'm saying. If you're going to start this thing and you're going to start fresh, I would think they've seen enough of Adam. Let's move on. That's all I'm saying. And you know, because I don't hear anything. You don't hear nothing. You don't hear, like, you know, there was a rumor in the beginning.
Well, no, we have heard players have said, players have spoken to them. There's been some media reports that the players feel that the reason that Adam Gase is still there is because ownership likes him as a human.
Right. Well, oh, as a human. Okay. Because, I know him and Woody don't fire coaches in the middle of the year. I didn't expect this. I didn't because that's not their MO. That's not what they do. But I just want to start hearing a little something like, oh, you know, they're going to pursue this guy maybe, or you don't even hear that. When Todd Bowles was on his last leg there, you heard those rumblings. You knew that the end was coming.
I hear you, and I appreciate your phone call, Dennis. Thank you. You know, I've been saying this is another thing to consider. You know, reports were that Adam Gase was very instrumental in McCagnan being fired. And very instrumental bringing in Joe D. And I've posed this question to Rich Cimini, who covers the team, and that is, you know, so what, you know, if I'm a general manager and I know that I'm now the general manager of an organization because a certain head coach lobbied for me to be there, am I going to turn around? Am I going to screw over that head coach who got me this job? Think about it. You going to do that? It's a very unique outlier situation. That's not typically how teams operate. Usually ownership and general managers get together and then they go out and they decide who the coach is going to be. It's not like, typically it's not the owner and the coach who decide, okay, let's bring in this general manager, because now that general manager is indebted to the head coach. It's a very strange situation. It's not your norm. So totally understand what you're saying and would not be shocked. I would not be shocked if Adam Gase will remain the head coach of the Jets moving into next year. I would not be shocked.
It is the big question mark with Trevor. Is the, you know, do you just give up your young quarterback and take him? And with the grade he has, we're talking about Sam Darnold or, say, a Daniel Jones. In this case, you would. He has that high a grade where Trevor Lawrence would force a team to say, okay, we like our quarterback, but this guy has the higher grade. This guy has a chance to be phenomenal, and that's what you're rolling the dice on.
That's Mel Kiper talking about what if the Jets get the number one pick and Trevor Lawrence is there. I think that's a no-brainer. By the way, the Michael Kay Show's 20 and 20 contest continues Monday at 3 o'clock. Be listening for your chance at 20 great prizes over 20 days to make your home life a little more enjoyable. For Monday, the guys are giving away $500 cash. And it's 20 and 20 contests brought to you by PC Richard & Son, Kansas City Steak, the Bartesian Premiums Cocktail on Demand, and 98.7 ESPN. Before we get to your calls, and Danny, I see you're hanging on. I want to rip through some of my plays this week in week 8 of the NFL season. So I love the Bills -4 for all the reasons I said. Julian Edelman is out. N'Keal Harry is expected to be out. The two wide receivers are supposed to be Jacoby Myers and Bird. Who are they? I don't know. They're not even, you know, picked up on waiver wires on fantasy, if that tells you anything. Stephon Gilmore apparently tweaked his knee at practice on Thursday. Wink, wink. Doesn't look like he's going to go. I wouldn't be surprised if he's traded before Tuesday. I think there's a Patriots team that are in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes themselves. So I love the Bills here. I love the Bills -4. I really do. Bills are getting healthy. John Brown is expected to play. They get Levi Wallace back in their secondary. So I'm all over the Bills -4. Tennessee and the Bengals. Bengals, three of their starting offensive linemen are going to be out. And oh, by the way, Joe Burrow has gotten destroyed, hammered all season long. Now he's three of his starting offensive linemen are out. Yeah, good luck with that. I love Tennessee -7. I think Derrick Henry is going to have a monster day against the Bengals. My dog of the week are the Raiders going up against Cleveland. The Raiders lost to the Bucks last week. That score was like 45-20-something. The score is not a good representation in regards to how that game played out. Believe it or not, the Raiders were still in the game against the Bucks. At the end of the third quarter, they were only down by 7, and then the Bucks scored like 21 points in the fourth quarter. More offensive linemen for the Raiders got injured. They weren't able to run the ball, yada, 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 all these reasons. But the fact that they were only down by 7 at the end of the third quarter against the Buccaneers, they're just a better team. And I just, everybody thinks, oh, you know, Cleveland's going to be better without Odell Beckham Jr. No, they're not. That team is ranked 17th in the NFL in explosive plays. They're not going to be better without Odell Beckham Jr., please. I love the Raiders. Wrong team here is favored. Love the Raiders. They're my dog of the week, and you can get them at the on the money line at +115. I'm going to get into my bad team teaser in just a second, so I'm going to pass right over that Kansas City Jets game. As I said, the Dolphins, they're favored by 3.5, 4 in some places. I'm staying away from this game. Everybody loves the Miami Dolphins. They're on the Tua side. I think this is more of a heart issue than it is a head issue. I'm staying away from that game. I told you I'm on the Baltimore Ravens -4 against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Saints, no Michael Thomas. Don't be surprised if he gets traded before the trade deadline, by the way. There's some shady stuff happening there. I don't get it. But the Bears are at home +5. I'm not thrilled with this game. I'm not thrilled with this play, but I'm leaning. I have a small lean towards the Bears. Again, just because. No Michael Thomas. Something's going on there in New Orleans. I don't quite understand it. Here's another dog that I like in this fight. And that's the San Francisco 49ers +3 at Seattle. I think this is going to be a really good game. I might even buy the hookup. I might even buy this up to 3.5. FYI. I think it's going to be a close game. San Francisco's getting better. The Seattle Seahawks, their passing defense is just god-awful. And like I said, 49ers getting healthier. And I'm hearing that Hasty very well could have a very solid day against the Seattle Seahawks. And then you've got the Philadelphia Eagles that are favored by 11 on Sunday night against the Dallas Cowboys. And that leads me to my bad team teaser. I love this. So it's a three-team tease. So as you know, if you're teasing three teams, you get 10 points on whatever side. So I'm teasing Kansas City down to -9.5 against the Jets. I'm teasing the Tampa Bay Bucks down to -2.5 against the Giants. And I'm teasing the Eagles down to 0.5 against the Cowboys. So my three-team tease, Kansas City, the Bills, and the Eagles. I'm calling it my bad team teaser because all three of those teams are going up against the three worst teams in the NFL. All right, you could argue the Jacksonville Jaguars are, but anyway. So that's my three-team bad team teaser. Those are the plays that I like this week. 800-919-3776. Let's go to Danny in Suffern. Danny, you're up.
What's up, Anita? I think you're fantastic. I wish you were on weekday 2 o'clock your time slot. Honestly,
thank you, Danny. That's fair.
I've been lobbying for you, Anita. I've been like, commenting on everything on Instagram for you.
Thank you.
You got a fan here. I wanted to make a point on Ryan Fitzpatrick and getting benched right now. I just don't understand it on multiple levels. One, the team is performing right now. They're in second place in the division. I'm a Jet fan, so I remember having Fitzpatrick on the team. I loved him. He was such a great guy, I think, for, like, younger people to learn from. Tua hasn't – he threw two passes. Not like he showed anything outstanding and came in a game where Fitzpatrick was injured. There's just no reason. They say people are trying to sit
so
next
this
to
is,
Fitzpatrick.
So, Danny, this is what I'm hearing. And please don't hang up. I want to have this conversation with you. This is what I'm hearing. Yeah. I'm hearing that Tua is blowing the doors off of everybody at practice. And as much as we don't want to believe it, but, like, you know, players have a lot of say in regard to decisions that are made on the team. You know, if the team is sitting there and they're rolling with Fitzpatrick, even though they're winning, but they're seeing this young number one overall draft pick crush it at practice. Apparently, again, this is what I'm hearing. Of course, I don't live in Miami. I don't see it from my own two eyes, but like blowing the door, like running circles around Ryan Fitzpatrick. So now what you have, Danny, so yeah, it's possible. So now, Danny, you've got players that are like, I don't understand. Why isn't he starting? He at practice, he's 10 times better than Fitzpatrick. Why is it like, what's going on here? You got Justin Herbert, who's, you know, we all can't stop talking about him out in LA. You got Joe Burrow, who everybody feels that, you know, Cincinnati's now onto something good because they're going to have him for the next 10, 15 years since he makes Cincinnati legit now moving forward. So now you've got players going, I don't understand. This kid is 100 times better than Fitzpatrick at practice. Why isn't he able to start? I think that from what I understand, this is what's been happening. And I have a feeling that has a lot to do with it, Danny. He's been crushing it at practice, crushing it.
It makes sense, but he's not going anywhere, and there's nothing defective about that offense right now. I didn't know just how much better he seemed than Fitzpatrick in practice and everything, but messing up the locker room, and you were in those locker rooms, I put baseball, like, messing something up there could be very dangerous. And it's a year where they're competitive. I was expecting fully Tua to take over at some point. I just think it's a little premature. Wait for some kind of decline from the offense or something with Fitzpatrick, and for him to come out and say that, and like, you know, he was hurting.
Oh, so hurt.
He wasn't expecting it either in a season where he knew to expect it. So I just don't think it made sense there.
Yeah, Danny, there's so much here, and I appreciate your phone call. Thank you, and I appreciate your very kind comments. Thank you very much. I mean, in the interview post, you can see that Ryan Fitzpatrick was very hurt and very disappointed with the decision, considering that he has won the last two games for the Miami Dolphins. But again, I think it was a combination of Tua outperforming Ryan at practice, all the players, all the teammates, everybody on that team seeing it, witnessing it, questioning why he wasn't playing, and the fact that they were during a bye week. And was the best possible decision and timeliness of giving Tua 2 weeks to prepare to start. And I think that's why the decision was made. I'm still not putting my money on the Dolphins +3.5. I'm not going to do it. Special guest Jeff Zerebak joins us from The Athletic to really dive into this Ravens-Steelers game. Again, the Ravens favored by 4. So, Jeff, I find this really interesting, right? Because of the Tennessee Titans and how they violated the COVID-19 protocol, it actually benefited the Ravens, because then what happens is the Ravens are coming into this game following a bye. Meanwhile, the Steelers now back-to-back road games after a very physical game against the Tennessee Titans. I mean, you know, who does this benefit?
Yeah, I think, in a perfect world, if you're asking both John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin, they would have preferred to have their bye after this game, because it's always one of the most physical games of the year. And there's always guys that get banged up in this game, and it would be good to have a reset after this game. But if you're looking at both teams, I think probably the Ravens, you'd have to say, got the little bit better of the deal. Not that they really did anything. It was out of their control, but they've gotten a chance to rest up. They had a chance to do some self-scouting, have some light practices last week where they didn't have to worry about game planning. They just could worry about fixing some stuff. And they come into the game relatively healthy, and they were able to rest up a little bit. So I think if you're comparing both teams, you'd have to say they probably have the advantage, just because they got a week to rest while the Steelers had to play a tight game against one of the most physical teams in the league.
All right, let's talk about some of the matchups here. And again, Steve had mentioned the one matchup that he's most excited to watch is the Pittsburgh Steelers wide receivers, especially with the Chase Claypool arriving in the NFL. One would argue that Ben Roethlisberger is working with one of the best wide receiving cores outside of losing Antonio Brown that he's had in a while. And meanwhile, many feel that the Ravens have the best duo corner, let alone secondary, in the NFL. So break this matchup down for us. Who do you think gets the edge here?
Yeah, I think it's a great matchup. And what we'll probably see, since Tavon Young went down to a season-ending injury in week 2, we've seen Marlon Humphrey mostly play the slot. So I'd imagine he'll see a lot of Juju Smith-Schuster. They've already had some tight, well-contested matchups over the years. And then you'll probably see Marcus Peters a lot on the outside on Deontay Johnson. And then with Jimmy Smith, who they're using sort of as a hybrid defensive back, plays some safety, plays some corner. They have 3 corners now, the Ravens, on injured reserve that probably would be on their 53-man roster. So the expectation would be that Smith will play more corner than safety. Plus, they like matching him up against big physical players. He's matched up against Kelce and Zach Ertz. He's played a lot of tight ends too, so I would think you'd see him a lot on Claypool. I would like the Ravens just outright without looking at any of the circumstances. Marcus Peters has been a little bit banged up, and Jimmy Smith missed a good chunk of the week of practice with an Achilles injury, and that worries you. So health-wise, it's not that great for the Ravens, but I think if you're just looking straight up, I think it's a really good matchup because the Ravens cornerbacks are very physical. They'll play man and they'll be right up there. Ben gets is getting the ball, getting rid of the ball quicker than any quarterback in the league. So that will should give the Ravens a chance to play physical and hit them at the line of scrimmage and all that. So that's I agree with you. I think that's probably the best matchup on paper when you look at the two sides.
Jeff Cerebeck, again, joining us here, and you can see his work all over The Athletic, who covers the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens make a deal with the Minnesota Vikings. Yannick Ngakoue comes in as, some would argue, one of the best defensive linemen in the NFL, and comes in at the most appropriate time, I think, getting that bye week ready to learn this defense and get ready to go up against the Pittsburgh Steelers, because this is one of the most competitive divisions, and I'm sure the Ravens, obviously, they want to win it. And to really improve that defensive line along with Calais Campbell and getting that pressure on Ben Roethlisberger, I think is going to be crucial and key. You said he's getting the ball off extremely quickly. What have you heard about this week for Yannick, and is he going to be ready for this matchup come Sunday?
Yeah, no question. I mean, I don't think there's any coincidence how much the Ravens pushed to get the deal done when they did. It allowed him, with the whole COVID protocol, it allowed him, he had the 5 days he had to wait, and it was Wednesday, the first day he was allowed in the building, just happened to be their first practice. So, DaCosta kind of set a deadline on when he wanted to get that deal done to make sure they could get as much out of Yannick Ngakoue in this matchup as they could get. They're raving about him, Anita. I mean, he's an intense, fiery guy. He sort of lifted the level at practice this week. He takes pass rushing very seriously. He plays with a chip on his shoulder, the type of guy that mixes up in practice, challenges teammates. We got a ways to go for that. He's still getting used to, the lay of the land and his new teammates. But I don't expect him to get eased in. Now, is he a 80-90% snap guy? Probably not. I think they'll probably use him as a situational rusher in the beginning until he gets a better grasp of the defense. But they're saying he's picking it up quick. And on second and third down or obvious passing situations, I think you'll see him on the field. I think he'll play a good bit, Sunday against the Steelers. And he's had some success. I know he's played them 3 times. I think he has 5 or 6 quarterback hits and a couple sacks in those games. So he's looking forward to it, and I think they feel like he'll be ready to go.
Jeff, let's turn our attention to what's going on the offensive side of the ball for the Ravens. It's like their passing game has been anemic so far this season. And I thought them going out and getting, Duvernay? I hope I'm pronouncing it properly.
Yeah.
By them drafting him and bringing him in, I thought, what a great 1-2 punch, aligning him besides Hollywood Brown, coming in a healthy Mark Andrews this season. I'm a little perplexed as to why their passing game has taken a step back. Can you shed some light on that?
Yeah, they talk so much in this offseason about evolving as an offense and challenging defenses in different parts of the field. And they come out in week one against the Browns and Lamar Jackson throwing the ball all over the place, completing deep passes. And you're like, wow, this is what they talked about. Since then, we haven't seen it. We just haven't. I mean, I think Lamar Jackson's been off a little with the deep ball. He's not been all that accurate and all that sharp. The offensive line, I think, has taken a significant step back, and that's a result, direct result of, the fact that a likely future Hall of Famer, Marshall Yonder, retired, and they really haven't been able to replace him. So I don't think the protection's there. I don't think Lamar Jackson's been as sharp in his downfield throws as we saw at some different points last year. And I just think they have a below-average receiving core. Marquise Brown can run. I think he's a quality receiver. Devin Duvernay, I think we're going to see more and more. He's a guy to watch. I mean, his snap count's gone up every week. Every week we've seen him maybe make one more play that he didn't make the last week. I think I could see him being featured more. So they'll work a little with the personnel, but the onus is on Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator. They just seem to be a team stuck in between an identity right now. Like, we all know they want to play power football and run the ball a lot, and that's how they're going to be successful. But they seem to be so obsessed with trying to prove that they can win through the air, too, and they could be a dynamic downfield passing team. And it's like almost like they're trying to prove they can do it now, so when they get to the playoffs and they get behind, like we saw against Tennessee, or they get in a situation where they need to pass, they can do it. But right now, the results just aren't very promising. I mean, I think they need to kind of get back to their identity a little bit and, you know, execute better. It's not just on Roman, obviously, but the onus is on him to sort of better marry the passing and the running game so they have a little more rhythm on offense, because they haven't had it for much of the year.
All right. Now, more on a fantasy football level, in regard to the backfield, what's the latest with Mark Ingram? And if he cannot go, are you activating Gus Edwards or Dobbins?
Yeah, I don't think Mark Ingram's going to play. Did not practice all week. Did not practice all last week. Now, they only had a couple practices last week with the bye, but he didn't take part in them. So after sitting out for 2 weeks, I do not think it would be a responsible decision to put him up against the Steelers in this hard-hitting, fast game. I just don't think he's ready for that, and I don't expect him to play. This just screams to me to be more of a Gus Edwards than a J.K. Dobbins game. Gus Edwards is a guy that they have a little more trust in. We saw him against the Steelers last year late in the season when Ingram was hurt, and, you know, Edwards was kind of their guy. So I would say if I'm starting a guy, I think Gus Edwards is going to get, you know, more touches than J.K. Dobbins, depending how the game goes. But I do think we'll see more J.K. Dobbins than we've seen, because they'll basically be focused on getting the ball to two guys rather than three. They've sort of been in between here, as I know all frustrated fantasy owners know, and it doesn't seem like any of the three have really gotten a rhythm. They haven't really been able to ride the hot hand with any of them. Now there's only two guys. I know how tough Steelers are against the run, but it's easier to get two guys involved. And I even think we may see a little of Justice Hill, who hasn't gotten a touch yet, as the number three back. But this screams to me a little bit more of a Gus Edwards game, because he's the big physical guy. This is a big boy football game, as they call it. And, I would expect him to get the start and probably get more of the carries early, and then they'll see how the game is going and see what they feel like, who has the hot hand and who they should stick with.
Great insight, Jeff. Jeff Cerebeck joining us here, and you can find his work all over The Athletic covering the Baltimore Ravens. Let's be honest, the premier game that we're all going to be tuning into at 1 o'clock on Sunday. Jeff, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
I love that he said Justice Hill. This is a running back that I've been waiting to see hit the scene for the Baltimore Ravens since last year. Granted, he's saying, again, fantasy football-wise, if Gus Edwards is out there, and I'll keep in mind, the Pittsburgh Steelers are the number one defense against the rush, so, there are four teams that are on a bye. You might be desperate. If you are, okay, pick him up, start him, put him in your flex, see what happens. But, man, if we could just get a little taste of Hill on Sunday, that would be tremendous.
This is the Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.